Joanne Ozug, and you are listening to The Road to Carnivore, episode 18. In this episode, we are going to take a closer look at one of the most damaging plant foods that you can eat, and one that is a staple food in the standard American diet, wheat. When I first decided to start digging into deeper research around wheat and grains, I expected to find some disturbing details about the health effects of wheat, particularly with gut health. The gut damage caused by gluten is pretty well known and well accepted. So I knew that what gluten does to the gut is bad, bad enough that I've avoided it simply on that merit. But what it does to the brain, to the arteries, to the reward system, to the bones and joints, to really every system and cell in the body, it's astonishing. Just because you don't notice any GI symptoms or joint pain, or even if you've tested negative for celiac, that doesn't mean wheat isn't permanently damaging your body. Much of the damage done by wheat is irreversible and often not noticed until it's too late. Part of the trouble with wheat today is that it's very different from the wheat of 10,000 years ago, or even 100 years ago, because of hybridization and extensive breeding. In the book Wheat Belly by Dr. William Davis, he discusses how people incorrectly assume that if you breed two plants that are known to be safe for consumption, then that must mean that anything bred from those two plants should also be safe for consumption. This isn't how it works in practice. He says, "Analyses of proteins expressed by a wheat hybrid compared to its two parent strains have demonstrated that while approximately 95% of the proteins expressed in the offspring are the same, 5% are unique, found in neither parent. Wheat gluten proteins in particular undergo considerable structural change with hybridization. In one hybridization experiment, 14 new gluten proteins were identified in the offspring that were not present in either parent wheat plant. Moreover, when compared to the century-old strains of wheat, modern strains of Triticum aestivum express a higher quantity of genes for gluten proteins that are associated with celiac disease. Multiply these alterations by the tens of thousands of hybridizations to which wheat has been subjected, and you have the potential for dramatic shifts in genetically determined traits such as gluten structure." What's particularly interesting about this is scientists had previously believed that there must have always been a relatively high percentage of celiacs in the population who were always there but were undiagnosed. But recent data suggests that this isn't true and that there really are skyrocketing numbers of people unable to tolerate modern wheat due to how heavily hybridized it is. There are compounds in this modern wheat that are completely unrecognizable to our bodies. We are not adapted to tolerate them. While gluten may be the poster child protein in grains, the most thoroughly documented to cause damage to the body, it is only one of several thousand different compounds. There are documented allergic and anaphylactic reactions to other grain proteins beyond gluten. One of the most dangerous consequences from consuming wheat is its contributing role in atherosclerosis. Atherosclerosis is the buildup of plaques in the arteries, and it's the leading cause of heart attacks and strokes. The outdated theory on what causes atherosclerosis was long thought to be high cholesterol. I plan to give cholesterol its own episode in this series and cover the history of how cholesterol was wrongly vilified. But there is nothing inherently bad about simply having quote-unquote high cholesterol. And you should know that the lab numbers for what's considered high have been lowered numerous times historically. The cynical take on that being that pharmaceutical companies want that number to keep going down so more cholesterol-lowering statins are prescribed to patients. Cholesterol is a very important molecule that has been shown to be protective. It's absolutely essential for our brains, and our hormones are synthesized from cholesterol. Cholesterol is widely associated with positive health outcomes. What matters more with cholesterol when it comes to heart disease and atherosclerosis is the size of those molecules and also whether they are oxidized or glycated. You've probably heard the terms HDL and LDL. HDL stands for high-density lipoprotein and is often called good cholesterol, while LDL stands for low-density lipoprotein and is often called bad cholesterol. This characterization is far too simplistic. If the LDL particles are big in size, sometimes called fluffy, that's considered healthy, while small, oxidized LDL particles have been implicated as the most common cause of heart disease. So what determines whether you have big or small LDL? Primarily, your diet, and it is highly documented that consumption of wheat causes the formation of this small and damaging type of LDL. Dr. Ronald Krauss is known to be the pioneer who demonstrated the connection between carb intake and small LDL particles. He's published 400 research articles and reviews on the dietary effects, genetic effects, and drug effects on cholesterol and coronary artery disease. In Wheat Belly, Dr. William Davis discusses some of Dr. Krauss's work. In a series of studies, he demonstrated that as carbohydrates as a percentage of diet increased from 20 to 65% and fat content decreased, there was an explosion of small LDL particles. Even people who start with zero small LDL particles can be forced to develop them by increasing the carbohydrate content of their diet. Conversely, people with plenty of small LDL particles will show marked reductions, approximately 25%, with reduction in carbohydrates and an increase in fat intake over just several weeks. There's another study I've linked to in the show notes conducted by Dr. Jeff Folick that had similar results, where reducing carbohydrates for 12 weeks resulted in an approximately 25% reduction of small LDL particles. So when you eat a carbohydrate-rich diet, more of these harmful small LDL particles are formed in the first place. But on top of that, wheat spikes your blood sugar tremendously, more than virtually any other carbohydrate, including table sugar, due to a compound in wheat called amylopectin A. And this blood sugar spiking has its own set of consequences, one of them being an irreversible process called glycation. Glycation is the process where sugar gets irreversibly tangled with and attached to protein or fat molecules in the bloodstream, forming glycotoxins called AGEs, or advanced glycation end products. These AGEs build up in your body permanently, and they are useless, structurally compromised compounds that impair normal cell functioning and damage numerous tissues in the body. In the book Grain Brain, Dr. David Perlmutter says, "When proteins are glycated, the amount of free radicals formed is increased 50-fold. This leads to loss of cellular function and eventually cell death. This calls our attention to the powerful relationship between free radical production, oxidative stress, and cognitive decline. We know that oxidative stress is directly related to brain degeneration. Studies show that damage to lipids, proteins, DNA, and RNA by free radicals happen early in the journey to cognitive impairment and long before signs of serious neurological disorders such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and Lou Gehrig's." Small LDL particles are 8 times more susceptible to glycation compared to large particles. And these glycated and oxidized small LDL particles contribute heavily to the atherosclerotic plaque that causes heart attacks and strokes. This all fits into the most current hypothesis on heart disease, that it's caused by the formation, glycation, and oxidation of these small LDL particles, resulting from heavy consumption of carbohydrates like sugar and wheat. Glycation also plays a huge role in damaging cartilage and joints and is a big culprit in the modern explosion of hip and knee replacements. Dr. Davis talks about this in his book Wheat Belly and says, "The cartilage in joints is uniquely susceptible to glycation since cartilage cells are extremely long-lived and are incapable of reproducing. Once damaged, they do not recover. The very same cartilage cells residing in your knee at age 25 will, we hope, be there when you are 80. Therefore, these cells are susceptible to all the biochemical ups and downs of your life, including your blood sugar adventures. If cartilage proteins, such as collagen and aggrecan, become glycated, they become abnormally stiff. The damage of glycation is cumulative, making cartilage brittle and unyielding, eventually crumbling. Joint inflammation, pain, and destruction results, the hallmarks of arthritis." AGEs are not only implicated in atherosclerosis and joint damage, but also in other conditions such as cataracts, which is clouding of the lenses in your eyes, reduced kidney function, and also dementia, where AGEs damage the neuronal connections of the brain. I've linked to a paper in the show notes that states that many of the complications of diabetes, the nerve damage, blindness, kidney failure, and heart failure, are thought to be a result of these advanced glycation end products. I want to be clear that it's not wheat alone that causes the formation of these AGEs. Sugar absolutely does as well, but wheat increases blood sugar more than sugar itself. It's also important to note that we all accumulate AGEs as we age, even with normal blood sugar levels, but they form faster in people with chronically elevated blood sugar. This is reflected by the fact that AGEs in diabetics have been found to be 166% the levels of non-diabetics. I've linked to numerous more studies in the show notes showing that abnormally high AGE accumulation is also identified in numerous types of cancers and even erectile dysfunction. Another health consequence of consuming wheat is the corresponding increase in visceral fat, which encircles the organs and abdomen. It's referred to as an active fat because it influences how hormones function in the body. Visceral fat itself produces inflammatory signals and reduces the body's ability to produce a fat-derived hormone called adiponectin, which protects against insulin resistance and atherosclerosis. Increases in visceral fat are also highly correlated with serious health conditions like dementia, cancer, heart disease, and overall mortality. Visceral fat is also known to produce excess estrogen in both men and women, as well as the hormone prolactin, which stimulates milk production and the growth of breast tissue. In one study I linked to, they state that prolactin release happens in proportion to the size of the visceral fat mass. Visceral fat also dramatically increases the occurrence of migraine. We'll talk more about wheat and the brain in a minute, but anecdotally, many people have eliminated or drastically reduced the frequency and pain of migraines by eliminating wheat. Another consequence from consuming wheat, and one of the most unexpected that I discovered, is its stimulation of the reward system in the brain. You know by now that I'm quite fascinated by certain foods' drug-like effects on the brain, sugar being the most ubiquitous and my personal nemesis. But wheat contains exogenous morphine-like compounds called exorphins. These morphine-like compounds in wheat bind with the brain's opiate receptors and elicit an extremely positive and addictive response. But what's even crazier is this response can be stopped immediately by a drug called naloxone. Naloxone is a medication that rapidly reverses an opioid overdose. It's commonly used for drugs like heroin, oxycodone, morphine, and fentanyl. And in studies, they have demonstrated that it can also stop the neurological drug-like response from wheat. So anytime you're eating wheat, there is an addictive drug-like response happening in your brain, and you will feel compelled to eat more. I think of how many times I've said that bread is addictively good. Well, it turns out it is in fact addictive. Another alarming consequence of eating wheat is the damage it does to the brain in particular. Wheat consumption is highly associated with really serious brain damage and disease, but also in day-to-day symptoms that people tend to normalize, like headaches, migraine, mood disorders, and depression. Non-celiac gluten-sensitive individuals have been shown to experience gluten-triggered inflammation that manifests specifically in the brain, which is called neuroinflammation. Neuroinflammation has been shown to play a major role in brain-related diseases like depression and anxiety, neurodegenerative diseases like dementia, ADHD, bipolar disorder, and schizophrenia. A more serious consequence to the brain from eating wheat relates to a specific kind of cell in the cerebellum called the Purkinje cell. The antibodies triggered by gluten bind to these Purkinje cells, causing irreversible and permanent damage. Purkinje cells do not regenerate. Dr. Davis discusses a study in wheat belly with about 100 subjects with a wheat-induced condition called cerebellar ataxia, and 60% showed atrophy of the cerebellum, reflecting this permanent damage of the Purkinje cells. People with this condition suffer from symptoms like involuntary twitching, jerking of the body, and loss of balance and coordination. Dr. Davis says, "The painful reality of cerebellar ataxia is that in the great majority of cases, you won't know you have it until you start tripping over your own feet, drifting into walls, or wetting your pants. Once it shows itself, your cerebellum likely is already shrunken and damaged. Halting all wheat and gluten ingestion at this point is only likely to keep you out of the assisted living facility. All of this due to the muffins and bagels you so crave." What's noteworthy about this brain condition is that the majority of people who suffer from cerebellar ataxia do not have any intestinal symptoms or gut issues that show signs of celiac disease. In Grain Brain, Dr. Perlmutter says, "Each one of us is unique in terms of our genotype, DNA, and phenotype, how genes express themselves in their environment. Unchecked inflammation in me could result in obesity and heart disease, whereas the same condition in you could translate to an autoimmune disorder." This notion is so important to understand, and it has become more and more clear to me in tandem with all the research and reading I've done over the past several years. There are so many diseases that people have. They're so numerous and varied, but it seems that the majority of them are different manifestations of one thing: a physiologically and evolutionarily inappropriate diet. Another highly cited issue caused by wheat consumption is gut permeability. The consumption of gluten triggers the release of a protein in your body called zonulin. This protein separates the intestinal junctions in your gut and allows foreign substances to enter the bloodstream. In episode 11, I talked about how dangerous this is, how your GI tract is like the skin of your insides. It is supposed to keep pathogens and other substances passing through your body out of your bloodstream. And a properly functioning healthy gut will have a tight cell-to-cell arrangement that acts as a barrier. The consumption of wheat is known to open up that barrier. This condition is called gut permeability or leaky gut, and it plays a role in celiac disease, Crohn's disease, and IBS, and is also highly associated with autoimmune diseases. Other diseases like schizophrenia, autism, and ADHD also seem to be greatly exacerbated by wheat consumption. The late Dr. Curtis Doehan is considered to be the pioneer who demonstrated the connection between schizophrenia and the consumption of gluten. Earlier in his life, he began to explore the connection between wheat and schizophrenia after observing that during World War II, there were fewer hospitalizations for schizophrenia in the United States, Finland, Norway, Sweden, and Canada when bread became unavailable due to food shortages. And these hospitalization numbers increased back to normal levels once wheat consumption resumed post-war. Dr. Doehan also observed that in New Guinea before Western influence, schizophrenia was diagnosed in only 2 of 65,000 adults. After their hunter-gatherer diet began to include Western foods like wheat, barley, beer, and rice, schizophrenia levels increased 65-fold to about 130 adults. In the same report, he writes that schizophrenia is virtually non-existent in cultures where gluten-containing grains are not consumed. Dr. Doehan ran numerous trials in his career, demonstrating the connection between wheat and celiac disease with schizophrenia, and others have since built on this work. I've linked to a paper in the British Medical Journal where they showed that the risk of schizophrenia is 3 times higher for patients with celiac disease. Wheat consumption also affects some of the more outward physical characteristics of the human body, causing skin disorders and acne, as well as hair loss. On a broad level, there are numerous studies that show that higher levels of insulin means higher levels of acne, and wheat spikes blood sugar more than table sugar. It is well documented in the scientific literature that the more overweight you are, the more acne you are likely to have. And anecdotally, individuals tend to experience drastic reduction or elimination of acne on diets like keto and carnivore. Not a lot of controlled studies have been done on acne and diet, but I linked to one randomized controlled study where a low glycemic load diet over 12 weeks greatly improves symptoms in acne vulgaris patients. There are numerous other wheat-related rashes and skin disorders, such as psoriasis and eczema, that can be greatly improved or completely eliminated with the removal of wheat. I've also linked to a study where they assert that alopecia areata, an autoimmune disease characterized by hair loss and baldness, may constitute the only clinical manifestation of celiac disease. One of their patients, a 14-year-old boy, experienced a complete regrowth of scalp and body hair as a result of a gluten-free diet. It's kind of amazing to me how many different ways the consumption of physiologically inconsistent foods like wheat can manifest in the body. After everything I've learned about the pervasive, far-reaching damage that wheat does to the body, it almost seems lucky to be someone who has an acute and immediate negative response to wheat. My husband is an example of one of these people. Now that he has a better baseline of health from carnivore, if he eats bread or pasta, he gets joint pain in his fingers and wrists that's so bad he can't even pick up our children. I actually don't seem to have this issue. I always thought, well, maybe I tolerate wheat okay. I didn't seem to have much immediate gut trouble or the arthritic pain that so many people get from wheat. And I understand why it's easy to fall into this thinking, because there are certain foods like sugar where if I eat it, I get an immediately drastically observable negative response. But this episode reminded me that just because you're not noticing an immediate negative response from a food, that doesn't mean it isn't doing damage to your body. In fact, much of the damage caused by plant foods is virtually impossible to notice on a day-to-day basis. It's happening in small, undetectable ways over years of time. And that is quite apparent with wheat, particularly with its effects on the brain or heart disease, where you may not be able to detect what's happening until the damage is irreversibly done. Thanks for listening to The Road to Carnivore. Follow me on Instagram with the handle The Road to Carnivore, all one word, for a continuation and expansion of this podcast. I'll share cooking tips for meat, practices I do for aligning with my body, life pleasures that aren't focused on food, and everything else that supports meat and carnivore. I'll see you there.